for great-looking t-shirts, hoodies, and sweatshirts, the TNT Shop is now open at tntradio.live. Critically analyzing global affairs, this is the Hervoy Moritz Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All righty, it is Wacky Wednesday. Got a good lineup today as well. What's going on around the world? Well, this story was brought to my attention by my hour two guests coming up. Gord McGill, trucker up in Canada, that apparently another Canadian has been debanked. This time, first it was Jeremy McKenzie from Scotiabank, and now it's someone from Calgary. It just happened yesterday from the BMO Bank. They got a letter. It says, after careful consideration, we'll be ending our banking relationship with you. It's been determined that your personal and or business activities fall outside of our risk appetite, aka you have a low social credit score. Therefore, we do not have an appropriate basis to maintain a banking relationship. As a result, we ask you close your accounts by April 7th, 2023. After that time, we will cease to operate these accounts. Welcome to the future, my friends. It is here. COVID-1984, hyper-1984 scenario, as my past guest, Edwin Black, told me 2+ years ago. The algorithm ghetto. Fun times. Not only are they going to be shutting your bank accounts, they'll be registering your chickens. What you thought? You thought, okay, I won't be able to buy food in the supermarket. I'll grow my own. Not so fast. People in Great Britain who keep chickens in their back garden will have to register them with the government under proposed new rules to crack down on bird flu. I can't read the news anymore with a straight face. I mean, while those who own 50 or more birds, such as chicken farmers, have to register their flock with the government, currently people who have birds for their own supply of eggs or as pets do not. And they'd have to update their information on their chickens on an annual basis. So good thing I live here in Mexico, where you can just kind of do whatever you want and have like chickens and whatever you like and everything. Well, I'm sure they're going to try to pull this year as well. So, closing your bank accounts, telling you how many chickens you can have. And in the U.S., the cost of a dozen eggs and a pound of bacon has increased 67% over the last 3 years. That's greater than the increase in the previous 18 years. So from 2002 to 2020, the cost of eggs went up 64%. And in the last 3 years alone, it went up 67%. Absolutely crazy, insane. I mean, that's why you would want to get a chicken, and that's why the government wants to register your chickens. And not only are they going to close your bank accounts, eventually take your chickens away, your car, you won't have anything to drive. Get this, in the UK, car production collapses to lowest for 66 years. So the number of new cars made in the UK has sunk to its lowest level for 66 years. Not enough manufacturing going on. What else we got going on? It's been all over the place. A lot of people from independent alt media have been chiming in on this tweet from the ADL, Anti-Defamation League, which at this point I'm simply calling the Defamation League. They're harping on President Trump, who has actually been extremely pro-Israel. I don't know why the Defamation League is now attacking, CPAC and Trump, but they write, quote, former President Trump also delivered remarks at CPAC that were in character, but still dangerous. His claims about expelling warmongers, driving out globalists, casting out communists, and throwing off those who hate our country. Echo classic anti-Semitic rhetoric. Well, let's just reverse that. So if the Defamation League, I mean ADL, if they consider dangerous and wrong, you know, that would then, you know, ergo, that would then lead us to deduce that the ADL supports, is pro-war and warmongering, that the ADL is globalist, pro-globalist, and communist, pro-communist, according to their own tweet, their own admission. I mean, that's just crazy. I mean, we shouldn't allow people to misrepresent, gaslight, and weaponize language unjustly and unfairly. So they're getting ripped on there by everyone. And some good news that Nina Yankowitz, I talked about her the other day. She's going to be, Jim Jordan has subpoenaed her. So getting some more pushback against the DHS, the Disinformation Governance Board, and Nina there. Let's see what happens. Reminder that if you miss your favorite TNT radio show or interview, you can always listen back. Everything is up at the TNTradio.live website and archive, and you can also search through the podcast platforms to find the different interviews and shows. Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, you name it. No reason to miss anything on TNT Radio.
Digging deeper on the facts.
It's a source I can trust.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
If you are getting tired of hearing Russia, Russia, Russia all the time, there may be some good news in the near future. Unless, of course, you happen to be Chinese. The U.S. intelligence community believes China, not Russia, is the biggest threat to Western-dominated world order, with concerns over Beijing dominating the annual report presented on Wacky Wednesday, that's today, to the Senate Intelligence Committee. Here with the story, joining me now is TNT Radio news producer Adam Ruckus-Clark.
Thanks, Rory. That's right. It is Wacky Wednesday. And on top of that, it's actually International Women's Day today, still here on in the States anyways. So shout out. Here's a woman for you, Avril Haines. If I'm not mistaken, she is the first ever woman to serve in the role of the United States Director of National Intelligence. So shout out to you, Avril, who takes front and center stage in today's news segment. She told lawmakers today on March 8th that the Chinese Communist Party is the U.S. intelligence community's quote-unquote unparalleled priority as the regime in Beijing draws increasing pushback over its aggression toward Taiwan and its relationship with, I guess we lied, Russia. So let's see. She said at the Senate Intelligence Committee hearing on worldwide threats, quote, the CCP represents both the leading and most consequential threat to the U.S. national security and leadership globally in its intelligence-specific ambitions and capabilities, making it for us our most serious and consequential intelligence rival, end quote. Let's see. She warned that China's aggressiveness, particularly toward Taiwan and its Western allies, is accelerating as the communist regime seeks to maintain its ascendancy on the world stage. In her opening statement, Haines said, quote, China, which is increasingly challenging the United States economically, technologically, politically, and militarily around the world, remains our unparalleled priority, end quote. However, she warned that the CCP is still seeking to expand its influence and is, quote, increasingly convinced that they can only do so at the expense of U.S. power and influence and by using coordinated whole-of-government tools to demonstrate strength and compel neighbors to acquiesce to its preferences, end quote. She cited China's ongoing territorial disputes with nations such as India, Japan, and its ongoing aggression, of course, toward Taiwan, the self-ruled island the CCP claims as its own. Haines listed a litany of China's overarching policy goals, the continued expansion of its military and nuclear capacity, research and development of counter space weapons to challenge burgeoning U.S. control of the upper atmosphere, and others that seek to unseat the United States from the top of the world stage. Chinese leader Xi Jinping's primary foreign policy goal is, quote, to reshape global governance in line with its preferences and governance standards that support its monopoly of power within China, end quote, according to Haynes. Let's see, Senator Mark Warner, a Democrat for Virginia, the committee's chairman and one of the chamber's more moderate Democrats, echoed that warning about Chinese ascendancy, saying in his opening statement that the CCP recently passed the point of becoming a, quote, near peer competitor with the United States, end quote. Xi and China not so happy lately. They said they had a poor choice of words, as far as I'm concerned, Rory, but they've been voicing what RT describes as unusually sharp criticism of U.S. policies this week, with President Xi Jinping telling a meeting of industry and business leaders on Monday that Washington had embarked on, quote, all-around containment, encirclement, and suppression of China, end quote. And yesterday, on Tuesday, Foreign Minister Qin Gang warned the U.S. that if, quote, it does not hit the brakes, but continues to speed down the wrong path, no amount of guardrails can prevent derailing, and there will surely be conflict and confrontation, end quote. I wonder why they chose to make reference to, clearly that, you know, trains, hello, derailing. I guess they've been making fun of us for our failing trains too, Hrigory. But yep. It appears to me that the next bad guy that everyone's going to be blaming, pointing fingers at, as we've been probably tracking for a while now on this show, it's China. China, China. There you go.
Yeah, this what you laid out echoes my conversation this afternoon I had with a podcast guest, a South African French podcast guest who's married to an Iranian, Ugo Kruger. And his most recent guest was Noam Chomsky, he spoke to the night before on some of these issues. And yeah, he would agree that China is the big enchilada and Russia is like, you know, tier two. And then, you know, China is the big one and, you know, to a lesser extent, Russia and then Iran and then North Korea. And so, yeah, it seems like all systems go against Beijing. And some other interesting stories, I mean, related to this that I've been looking at before we just joined, Visual Capitalist published yesterday. I thought this was interesting. And this factors into how one would quantify adversaries. And China and the U.S. have the top bank brands on the planet. And it's interesting that it says the 10 most valuable bank brands of 2023 are evenly split between China and the U.S., and the top four are Chinese, followed by all U.S., and then the 10th is Chinese again, and China leads with $262 billion to America's $165 billion. So, you know, another gauging of economic strength. You know, I was looking at a chart yesterday in terms of the comparison of Navy. The world's navies, the U.S., China, quantitatively, again, has more than the U.S. And this piece from CNN I was going to mention, but now I might mention it now as well. It says Ukraine war has made it easier for U.S. to isolate China in the Pacific. It says a year after Russia invaded Ukraine, Xi Jinping's backing of Putin has opened the door for the U.S. and partners in the Pacific to shore up sometimes frayed relationships to the detriment of Beijing. And this is stuff that we've been covering on TNT for a while now, how Japan has doubled defense spending. South Korea has not acknowledged stability in the Taiwan Strait is essential to its security. You know, Asian NATO, Philippines announcing new U.S.-based access rights. And they say that analysts say all these things would have likely happened without the war in Ukraine, but the war and China's backing of Russia has helped grease the skids to get these projects done. So that just kind of adds to what you've been saying, that the entire West is prepping for conflict with China.
Well, and it's going to be over this Taiwan issue. That's going to be the precept, of course. They're already like they're projecting their punches and almost like a to get out in front and project a little bit here. It literally says right in this article, this is so crazy, but of particular concern to the United States is that China may seek to take advantage of the international confusion caused by the Russia-Ukraine war to attempt what the article stated here, coming from Haynes, its long-held goal of taking over Taiwan. And intelligence officials also worry that China may continue to make overtures to Russia, an alliance that could be catastrophic for U.S. interests if it comes to fruition. Maybe it's not going to be Russia, Russia, Russia is going away, but China, China, China is just going to be chanting in the background alongside them.
Yeah, and a lot of people point to 2025. That's in 2 years. I think that's probably the earliest we can expect any fireworks, any sorts of fireworks to go off. So that's 2025. And other guests I've spoken to, everyone from Martin Armstrong to Brandon Weikart, have this highlighted numbers, years such as 2027, 2028. And so the second half of this decade is surely going to be interesting. And again, reminder, phone lines are open. Feel free to call in, numbers at the top of TNTRadio.live, and I have my guest, national security expert Claire Lopez, ready on the other side of this break.
TNT Radio's James Freeman.
On this show, we talk to people from all over the world. I've interviewed people from America, England, Scotland, Ireland, Germany, Italy, Sweden, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Zimbabwe, South Africa, Ukraine, and also Russia. Now, one of the things in common across most of these countries and the stories that we've been told is about the media and the governments of those countries and how they have acted in lockstep since the start of the pandemic. Censorship of dissenting voices on lockdowns and the vaccines have also been a common theme across all of these countries, as has coercion and mandates on the COVID-19 vaccines. Disappearing political opposition as well. We've seen that in the UK. There has been no political opposition over the last 3 years. Now, I don't know about you, but I find this very strange because number one, in most of these countries, this is not the kind of behavior we've become to expect from government and the media. It's not normal. But number two, it's odd, isn't it, that it's happened in exactly the same way across all of these countries.
James Freeman on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Public school is the instituted agency of socialism throughout every community.
The U.S. government has no authority to have any role in education.
We're going to lose our very republic if we don't stop this indoctrination of children in government schools.
What happened to us in China can happen here.
Have one kind of education and then call it equity.
It's about outcomes. It's about trying to force us all to be equal.
I think we're going to have a race civil war in our hands.
We are exposing kids to pornography as early as kindergarten. Parents just don't know.
No, not anymore. Not anymore. Parents need to wake up. They don't have the interests of your child at heart.
Truth and Lies in American Education at SalemNow.com.
We don't talk at you.
Blah, 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 blah.
Shut
blah.
Up! We talk with you.
What do you think of this idea?
Let me tell you this.
What's wrong with this picture?
From government overreach to the global pandemic, TNT Radio invites you to join us as we separate facts from fiction, truth from propaganda, day in, day out.
Call the open line anytime.
In the U.S. and Canada, call 1-888-201-6425. In the U.K., call 033-024-1026. And in Australia and New Zealand, call 1-800-670-310. Free speech has a home on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Joining me is national security expert Claire Lopez. She's got a massive bio, but I'm just going to read a short part of it. President of Lopez Liberty LLC, former VP for Research and Analysis at Center for Security Policy, Senior Fellow at the London Center for Policy Research, member of the Board of Advisors for the Canadian Mackenzie Institute. 2016, she was named to Senator Ted Cruz's presidential campaign National Security Advisor. team. She completed Marine Corps Officer Candidate School in Quantico before declining a military commission to join the CIA. You can find her on Twitter at Claire M. Lopez. She writes for different outlets. Most recently, I found some of her stuff at American Greatness and theunitedwest.org, ccnationalsecurity.org, americantruthproject.org. So much is going on there. Welcome to TNT Radio, Claire.
Thanks so much. Glad to be with you.
Is there any other website or project that I should mention? You've got so much going on.
No, I appreciate that. I think you hit most of the ones that I'm associated with now. I will add one more, as you ask. Have a look at defendtheborder.org. Defendtheborder.org. It's a joint project of the United West with Tom Trento, with whom I've been working for many years, and Tom Homan, President Trump's former acting director of ICE.
All right. Yeah. And I do want to get your thoughts further on about Mexico and issues related to the border. But maybe to start, you know, I like to get my guests sort of big picture, 30,000 foot view on things, and to get your big picture geopolitical view on things. And I frequently mention that I feel we are at a historic crossroads, you know, a sort of a 1930s moment, even an 18-teens moment, if you will. And you recently wrote for American Mag, "Where is our George Kennan?" And the summary to that article says, "We Americans must prioritize the formulation of a new national security response to the threat from globalist would-be emperors that include China, Iran, and Russia," end quote. And so how do you see the coming together of Mackinder's heartland and World Island and Eurasia, the dragon bear, as some call it? What's your take on where we're at?
Well, you know, I'll start with George Kennan himself then, because he was an American diplomat posted to Moscow just after the end of World War II. And in 1946, from there, he wrote what's come to be called the Long Telegram, many thousands of words long, whereas the typical cable back to State Department is, you know, maybe a page or two. But what he did in that long telegram is outline his analysis of the Stalin regime of the USSR at that time, what its intents were, what its motivations were, what is communism. And that analysis was so prescient, so insightful, that it set the tone, it set the basis, really, for American foreign policy during the Cold War for decades to come, and on up until, really, until President Ronald Reagan in the 1980s and eventual collapse of the dissolution of the Soviet Union in 1991. So, the reason I brought George Kennan up in that article at American Greatness is because I don't see that same kind of insightfulness, that same kind of national security consciousness, perhaps, or awareness on the part of our senior national security leadership today. I don't mean everyone. There are, you know, some very good exceptions to that, of course, but in general, I think that we're seeing a lack of the kind of insightfulness that George Kennan showed in that long telegram. So with regard to Russia, I think we have to understand a couple things first. Both Russia and China are not countries in the typical sense of the word today. They're both empires. They're empires built on the forcible conquest of other people. In China, it's the Manchus, the Mongolians, the Uyghurs, the Tibetans, the Cantonese. In Russia, it's the same thing. And that tendency towards conquest and empire building is very much alive with Vladimir Putin, today's ruler of the Kremlin. And in his speeches, certainly, recently and further back, he has spoken very openly about his desire to reestablish as much of the Soviet Union as he can. And really, his vision that somehow he has the self-acclaimed right, in air quotes there, to re-incorporate all Slavic peoples by force, if he feels like it, into his new empire. He's a globalist writ large. And that is what's going on with Ukraine right next door to the Russian Federation.
Yeah, and I have heard analysts and you know, I do have a sort of try to a middle of the road approach when looking at the U.S., Russia and China. But I wouldn't disagree with you that, you know, I think Gregory Copley, one of my past guests and others have pointed out that, yes, I mean, Russia is building its or trying to reshore its civilizational state, as some call it. You can call it, you know, empire. China as well. And even was a guy Verhofstadt of the EU. You know, he said the EU is an empire and that we live in a world of empires. And, you know, maybe even some can refer to India, you know, in a sense as an empire. So I think, yeah, that's what we're dealing with, a new age of empires like the video game. And we're going to have to jump to a short news break. Claire will be right back.
What brings you here?
News Talk Radio.
TNT Radio News.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. Officials from within the Ukrainian government have insisted their country is innocent of any wrongdoing after a New York Times report linked the country to the sabotage of the Nord Stream gas pipelines between Russia and Germany. Premier Daniel Andrews has defended the use of taxpayer funds to gauge public sentiment during the world's longest COVID-19 lockdowns in the state of Victoria. Fed Chair Jerome Powell says the central bank has numerous concerns with a risky cryptocurrency market.
God, you're amazing. You're a much better listener than my wife. You're always there for me. I think I may be in love.
Where is she?
Well, it's not what it seems. I was talking to...
Who's the tramp I heard you talking to?
That was my Alexa, sweetie.
Well, she sounds like a tramp.
Fall in love with news and talk all over again with your smart device. Just tell it to play.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
We're back with Claire Lopez, national security expert. Find her on Twitter at Claire M. Lopez and check out the website defendtheborder.org. And just continuing on the theme of Russia and China, do you feel we are in a potential, you know, World War III scenario where we can escalate into that? And, you know, there's a lot of talk now about a conflict with China 2025. Some, you know, generals are talking about. So, you know, how do you assess the threat from Russia and China?
Well, you know, where I would start is many people will ask the question, well, what interest is it of ours? What is the national security interest of the United States of America way over here, isolated, you know, between our oceans? And that's far away, Ukraine and Russia. That's Europe's problem. Well, I think we said that in World War I. We said that before World War II. And the point here is that not only if Vladimir Putin and Moscow are permitted to rampage their way across Ukraine, that on the other side of Ukraine are many NATO member countries, which we, as the United States, are obligated by treaty, the NATO treaty, to defend in case of attack. But here's the broader question. You started off, I thought, in a very good way tonight here with, you know, a 25,000 foot look at everything. And what I would say, the interest we have is not just, you know, that we very well could be drawn into boots on the ground, not just materiel support, weapons support and so forth, but boots on the ground support were a NATO country to be attacked next, which Vladimir Putin has threatened, by the way, multiple times. But here's the 25,000 foot view that I see, and that is that what our interests are, I think, as defenders of the Westphalian nation state, sovereign nation state system. Treaty of Westphalia, of course, after the horrific 30 years war in Europe, concluded in 1648, for the first time set forth the independent sovereign nation state with secure, ideally, inviolable borders for the first time. Been honored in the breach as often as not since then, of course. But that's the ideal, I think. And it's the ideal of the kind of world order that I think we want to live in and leave to our children and grandchildren. And when would-be emperors and warlords rampage across the landscape, bombing, slaughtering, and committing horrific war crimes as they go, If we have an interest in maintaining that global world order of sovereign nation states, then it's our duty and responsibility to help those coming under attack by the would-be neo-emperors, if you will, warlords or what have you, the Putins, the Xis of the world. That's how I would look at it.
And it's great that you bring that up, because I'm a big fan of the Westphalian, you know, nation state model, as you outlined. And you mentioned globalism abroad, and I wanted to ask you about globalism at home. You know, the Biden regime, the left, there's a lot of problems within the U.S. And what's your take, you know, on the domestic situation? There's, I mean, it's very polarized. People even talk about a second civil war. And so your thoughts about globalism at home?
Well, we certainly are in a very difficult position right now. We hear Americans in the United States. I will tell you, I am a supporter of our former President Donald Trump, whom I just heard speak at the recently concluded CPAC convention this past week and weekend. What I'm seeing under the current administration of Joe Biden is a reversal of so many of the policies that I think made the Trump administration so successful. And that would be, first of all, you say globalism, and there we're looking at an erasure, essentially, of our southern border. Why I mentioned our website, defendtheborder.org, where we're working with Tom Holman to highlight these issues. Open borders, millions of illegal aliens have poured across that border in the last 2 years of the Biden administration. We do not know who they are. We don't know what, number of them might be criminals, narco-traffickers, human traffickers, child traffickers, jihadis, Islamic terrorists. We have no idea. But that is the very definition of a globalist perspective, erasure of borders. We're also looking at an administration that has destroyed our energy independence, which President Trump established. We have more fossil fuels, oil and gas on our territory, in particular up in Alaska and the Anwar region. More than any other single country on the face of the earth, and that includes Russia and Saudi Arabia, but we're not allowed to use it. We're looking at an economy in dire straits. We're looking at tendencies to centralization of ever more government authority and a tyrannical abuse of that authority, I would say. So many different problems. We have to solve them. We're going to solve them. We will get things back on track again. But those are the things that stand out the most for me right now.
Yeah, just more on Mexico. I'm just curious. Your last name is Lopez. So do you have some? Are you
my married name? My married name. Husband from Southern Texas.
Okay, because I by chance I'm from Chicago, but I'm you call me an American Mexican. I became a Mexican national 5 years ago. But, you know, we recently had, and the narcos are a real problem. Somehow I've survived over a decade down here in Mexico. But we recently had the incident over the border in Matamoros, I think Tamaulipas, and 4 U.S. citizens were kidnapped, killed. Some I think 2 were recently survived. They were... they're found alive. And now we had Lindsey Graham call for the use of U.S. force in Mexico. It seems like the current president, AMLO, has a very, he's not really doing much. He's taking it easy on the cartels. How do you sort of view that situation? And I've had other folks on, Ed Calderon, who's kind of well known. He's a Mexican U.S. security expert. And there are no ready solutions. It's a very difficult, it's like a deep rooted cancer. And so any further thoughts on what's going on with?
Yeah, sure. It's interesting that you mentioned Matamoros, because my husband's side of the family is from Brownsville. the tippy tip of Texas that is right across the bridge from Matamoros. And when our kids were all small, we used to go across all the time to go shopping, go to lunch, you know, and it was safe and secure at that time, a long time ago. Unfortunately, right now, Mexico is a narco state. I would say that the cartels, the various cartels, Sinaloa, up along the Arizona border mostly, you've got the Gulf cartel further to the east along the Texas border. You've got the Zetas further south. You've got Jalisco Nueva Generacion. These cartels literally run Mexico right now. And unfortunately, the president, MANLO, Manuel Antonio López Obrador, is not only beholden or suborned by the cartels, but it has socialist and Marxist tendencies of his own. Part of, for example, the Sao Paulo Forum, founded in the 1990s in Sao Paulo, Brazil, and there too, you know, an outright Marxist communist, Lula da Silva, Luis Inácio Lula da Silva, has just taken over the presidency. We listened to Jair Bolsonaro, the former president of Brazil, speaking at CPAC this past few days, brought the house down. But as far as Mexico goes, the other problem about not just Mexico, but Latin America more generally, is that enemies of the United States, adversaries, enemies of the United States, including Iran in particular, and its Islamic Jihadi proxy terror group, Hezbollah, have a massive presence across South America, Central and up into Mexico. And there in Mexico, Hezbollah works very closely with those narco-trafficking cartels, and they in turn are linked to China. As we know, the chemical precursors to make fentanyl, which is killing over 100,000 Americans per year now, the precursor chemicals come from China, sent to Mexico, where the cartels mix them up, press out the tablets, the pills, lace other pills illicitly bought, but contraband or counterfeit prescription drugs like Xanax and Adderall and things. Young people buying these things over the internet, not knowing what's in them, laced too often with fentanyl. So you've got concentrated just south of our border, at on and across our border, these threats from you know, the Islamic Republic of Iran, its terror proxy Hezbollah, connections to communist China, and Marxist communist influences on top of it all. So I think that we're in a war, whether we admit it or not, with those cartels. They certainly have declared war on us, kidnapping those Americans, two killed, one more badly injured, and then the other perhaps okay, two recovered, two dead. I mean, that's just the tip of the iceberg. Again, if you go to the website defendtheborder.org, you'll find lots of information about this whole situation with the cartels and the border. In articles, some of those I write and comment on, also in documentaries and shorter videos too.
Yeah, and I've heard AMLO before state he's pro-world government. So if you talk about globalism, and just last year, he discussed integrating Canada, U.S., and Mexico. So, you know, that's North American Union. But just, you know, El Salvador, you've got Nayib Bukele. He seems to be cracking down quickly on the organized crime there.
Yes, do you think the few who are doing that.
Would you say that's a good model, like what he's doing?
I think yes, I do think so. I can't say that I have a lot of confidence or hope that others in the region, other Central American countries like Nicaragua, Honduras, or Guatemala, even Panama, you know, Costa Rica, maybe aside, would be following that example of President Bukele there in El Salvador, where, by the way, I served for 2 years at the embassy during the last 2 years of their long-running civil war.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And that proves that if, where there's a will, there's a way. You know, if governments wanted to, they could quickly deal with these issues, including our, you know, our own American governments. And maybe to get your thought, I haven't been following it too closely, but all these train derailments, and then, you know, most notably, there's the discussion of East Palestine. You know, is that just an example of how our infrastructure is falling apart, or are those coordinated attacks? What sort of your takeaway regarding these Ohio train derailments?
I don't see any coordinated pattern of attacks there. Yes, there have been all kinds of failures throughout our transportation system, be they near misses at airports, the train derailments, the supply chain backups, our port systems, all of that. But I think that has a lot more to do with, unfortunately, our current Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security. I'm sorry, the current secretary, him too, Mayorkas, but the secretary of the Department of Transportation is who I meant to say, Pete Buttigieg, who more often than not seems to be AWOL, just not engaged in these issues at all.
Yeah, that's a, good point. We're going to have to jump to our break. Again, you can follow Claire on Twitter at Claire, that's C-L-A-R-E, Claire M. Lopez, and check out defendtheborder.org. We'll be right back on DNT.
De-weaponizing weather
with reality and perspective.
I'm going to continue to read from the Book of Alex as in Epstein, who is the great author of The Moral Case for Fossil Fuels and Fossil Future. But first, I want to comment on Janet Yellen's latest. This is hard to believe that the person that's basically directing what's going on with the U.S. Treasury and things like that is saying what she's saying. The price tag for the conversion to a fossil fuel-less economy in the United States is estimated to be $300 trillion. $300 trillion! Where are we going to get that money? I'll calm down. Undeniable energy fact 3. Fossil fuels are uniquely cost-effective. Despite 100 years of aggressive competition, fossil fuels provide 80% of the world's energy and is still growing, especially in the countries most concerned with cost-effective energy. And guess who that is? China. This is TNT climate and weather watchdog meteorologist Joe Bastardi asking you to try to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you got.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
The Associated Press reported that tax findings for fiscal 2020 by the Black Lives Matter Global Network Foundation list millions of dollars paid to entities controlled by relatives and close associates of then-executive director and co-founder Patrice Cullors. The IRS filings, the first and only public disclosure of the Black Lives Matter Foundation's finances, show that the non-profit took $76,872,002 in fiscal 2020, mainly in donations from corporate backers and individuals, and paid out $25,997,945 in grants to other non-profits and contractors. Cullors, the only board member listed on the 63-page filing, resigned as executive director in June 2021. She did so just weeks after 2 months of victims of police violence released a statement demanding that BLMGNF stop exploiting the deaths of their children to make money. The same month as the mother's statement was published, the New York Post revealed that Cullors and her wife had purchased 4 properties worth approximately $3 million between 2016 and 2021.
The conversation continues.
We chose not to vaccinate our children because we feel like the shot posed more threat than the disease.
On today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And we're on our final segment with national security expert Claire Lopez. Find her on Twitter at Claire M. Lopez. Check out defendtheborder.org, americantruthproject.org. And you mentioned the DHS Mayorkas, and previously we discussed this trend in passing. You mentioned this trend of authoritarianism in America, and that's one of my biggest concerns as a U.S. citizen, and as a U.S. citizen, which I believe I've been targeted by my own government, among many others, for doing things that are very American and peaceful and patriotic. Basically, what we're doing now, having conversations to figure out what's going on. And, you know, I had my Patreon banned 2021. And last year, the same week that the DHS, Mayorkas' DHS, rolled out the Disinformation Governance Board with Nina Yankowicz, I got banned from PayPal. So I believe it was actually the DHS telling PayPal to ban me, among others, a few others. And I just find this, and it's not even, you know, for me, the issue is just the fact that the government is doing this to me, where, you know, I grew up in an America where you're told democracy, liberty, freedom, and what's going on here? So do you have any thought on, and, you know, they did it to Trump. They've shut some of his bank accounts, I believe, took him off of social media. And so your thoughts on this trend?
Yeah, it's all very disturbing. So our First Amendment to the Constitution defends the five liberties that include freedom of speech and freedom of press, freedom of assembly, freedom of the right to redress government for redress of grievances, peaceful assembly. And what is disturbing is that this particular administration, the Joe Biden administration, has weaponized. We're listening to hearings up on Capitol Hill in a Republican House of Representatives just this week now, weaponized our law enforcement agencies, national security agencies, which have collaborated over an even longer period of time, going back many years, with big tech, some of which we would not even have known about had not Elon Musk bought Twitter and then released and continues to release the Twitter files showing this illicit collaboration among a weaponized government and the security agencies of it, together with big tech, meaning the social media like Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and Google and you name it, in ways that circumvent the First Amendment, but are nonetheless completely in violation of that First Amendment, because the U.S. government has been using cutouts, if you will, in big tech to do what it would be prohibited from doing itself as the U.S. government under the First Amendment of the Constitution. So yes, the restrictions on our free speech, free press, are deeply disturbing. This way lies tyranny. And glad to see that so many are now standing up. Glad to see that the hearings, in particular the Oversight Committee of the House of Representatives, holding hearings about this, and other committees there too, to get to the bottom of what has actually happened and put a stop to it.
Yeah, I just read 2 days ago, Jim Jordan subpoenaed Miss Nina Yankowicz, and she's trying to be the victim now. I mean, she put out a video asking for money to sue Fox, she's accusing us and Fox of vigilantism and anti-Americanism when it's total gaslighting. Like, she's the one going after people like me, just having conversations, and now, you know, it's just crazy. But you mentioned, we briefly touched on East Palestine, and I did want to get your thoughts on the other Palestine, the Israel-Palestine issue. There seems to be, again, a lot going on there. Some Israelis discontent with the Israeli government because of some, I guess, rules related to the Supreme Court, and Netanyahu is having issues, and then the issues with Palestine and Iran. And so what's sort of your snapshot of what's important when it comes to Israel and Palestine?
Right. So not to give too short shrift to East Palestine on the border of Ohio with Pennsylvania, where that terrible train derailment took place, and the release of the toxic gas in the release of the chemicals, vinyl chloride from the overturned cars and the burning of that into the atmosphere, getting into the water and everything else. Not to make light of that. We talked about Department of Transportation and Secretary Buttigieg, but pivoting, as you say, to the Middle East, where Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has just been reelected. Is it the third time or the fourth time, I think, to the prime ministership at the head of a very strong coalition in the Israeli parliament called the Knesset? And he ran on a platform which obviously the Israeli people, the voters, endorsed with his election. But that platform included a commitment to readjust the balance of power, if you will, between the legislative branch of the Israeli government and the judicial branch. Now, as your listeners may or may not know, Israel does not have a constitution, as ours does. By the way, yes, we do know what the articles are about. Number one is it deals with the legislative branch. The second one deals with the executive branch. The third of our amendments to our constitution deals with the judicial branch. But Israel doesn't have a constitution and has governed since its modern day establishment in 1948 by the Knesset, by the elected representatives, the members of the Knesset, the MKs, if you will. Bills pass through the Knesset. By the way, they have to be read and presented three times and voted on three times before they become law. But what happened back in the early 1990s is that the then president of the Israeli Supreme Court, Aharon Barak, was his name, basically arrogated unto himself and the judicial branch, the Supreme Court in particular, the authority to overturn any law ever passed by the Knesset, by the people's representatives, to even contravene articles or decisions made by the Israeli Department of Defense and the Israeli Defense Forces that answer to it, and maybe most shockingly to us here in America, arrogated unto itself the authority to nominate, to appoint, and to confirm all justices and judges at every level of the judicial system in Israel, up to and including the Supreme Court. In other words, they can approve their own successors. Well, Netanyahu campaigned on a pledge to rebalance that grab for power by the Supreme Court. According to polling, something like 2/3 of Israelis support this readjustment, this set of reform measures that are now making their way through the Knesset. As we speak, the first reading, the first vote has taken place overwhelmingly in favor of the reforms. Two more yet to go. But in the meantime, what I wanted to mention here especially is that the United States administration, the Joe Biden administration, has inserted itself in what I consider to be an inappropriate way in Israel's internal policies and politics. There is a front group called the Movement for Quality Government, MQG, which is basically the front group that is heading up the protests that we're seeing of people on the streets of Israel opposing these very democratically oriented reforms that would return power more directly to the people by way of their elected representatives in the Knesset. But this MQG nonprofit NGO organization seems to have quite a bit of money coming into it. They're the ones that arrange for the buses, the transportation, the placards, the banners, the signs that the people are waving, the stages that are set up for the speakers who speak, calling for violence and civil disobedience, unheard of really in Israeli modern Israeli Jewish state history. But back to MQG, our own Department of State in the Biden administration actually is financially supporting this front group that is aimed at bringing down, essentially, Bibi, as they call him, Prime Minister Netanyahu's government. And although the State Department doesn't give them much money, relatively speaking, it's the appearance, it's the optics, it's the appearance of the United States government backing, funding, supporting this protest movement against what is really a very democratically oriented proposal of reforms. But the analysis of that might be that the Biden administration opposes the Netanyahu government, the new one. It just took, it was just elected last November, because, or at least in part, because the Netanyahu government opposes any restarting up of talks over Iran's nuclear weapons program or revival of the JCPOA, Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, from July of 2015, that President Trump took the United States out of. Mm-hmm. And because...
We're out of time, Claire.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, there's many other things I wanted to get your thoughts on. Well, we're going to have you back. Thank you so much for being on TNT. Follow Claire on Twitter, Claire M. Lopez, defendtheborder.org. I'll be right back.